You never told me that. I would remember. If a yellow is anything, it's a bad listener. They're really miserable at it, in point of fact. Many yellows I've met say that they're very good listeners. And of course, supplied entertaining examples of this undeniable fact. But maybe it could be their memory that was at fault. Basically, they believe that they listen very well. But somewhere along the way to the brain's storage shelves, whatever they heard simply gets lost. Poof! No, it's not about memory. It's about how a yellow is often uninterested in what others say, because he knows he could say it so much better himself. He doesn't stay focused. He begins thinking about other things, begins doing other things. He does not want to listen. He wants to talk. They're also quite childish, in that they only like doing things that are enjoyable. If a statement or story or just a normal conversation is boring, then they close their ears. Of course, there's a remedy. Take a course in entertaining rhetoric. Then you may be able to keep your yellow friends, partners, or colleagues' attention. If you can present your message in a more amusing way, he'll at least remain seated a bit longer. Rhetoric isn't the art of talking, but rather the art of getting others to listen. If you have a good friend whom at this stage you have identified as yellow, you know exactly what I'm talking about. In mid-sentence, he opens his mouth and starts talking about something completely different. Bad memory? No. You were simply being tedious. But truly, add a bad memory into the equation and we really are in trouble. Many truly successful people in society are often better listeners than the general average. They don't willingly talk as much as they listen. They already know what they know. And to learn more, they simply have to hush up and hear what others are saying. It's a way to absorb new knowledge. This is something yellows need to understand better, if they're not to be perceived as completely hopeless or just stagnant in their personal development. They must, for example, listen to the message I've presented in this last section. If they refuse to take it in, just because it's a difficult and possibly a boring message, they'll never learn anything. How green people are perceived. So, what do other colours, think about greens? The picture is ambivalent. Besides the fact that they're considered pleasant, friendly, and caring, there are other opinions. A person who, out of fear of conflict, says yes but means no, how do you handle him? How do you know what he really thinks? Reds and yellows especially have problems with what I call the silent resistance. Remaining silent rather than speaking out. Certain greens, however, tend to tell the truth behind the back of the person concerned. Therefore, others can perceive a green as dishonest, even though their intention is only to avoid conflict. In general, greens always expect the worst, and therefore tend to lie low. Then we have the green's inability to change. When a green understands the need for change but still says no thanks, that leads those closest to him to think that he is afraid of change, stubborn, unconcerned, and indifferent. As usual, we're talking about perceptions. If we ask reds what they think about greens, there will be some heavy opinions. Pig-headedness will never be a virtue. What do you do with a person who never changes his views? Ever. Not even when the facts indicate that it's time to take a different path. How do you handle someone whose resolve to continue on the present course has completely taken over? The difference between greens and blues is that while a blue holds out for more facts about an issue, greens expect everything to simply blow over, since they refuse to change their minds. They've made a decision about something and will not concede. Why? Because they don't usually do that. Think about it. It may have taken you your whole life to come to a particular opinion about the dangerous cholesterol in food, about space travel, or about Britney Spears. Suddenly, this guy comes along and says that you should exchange your current opinion for his. It's not going to happen. The green is waiting for the right feeling to come over him before he makes any changes. If it doesn't, well, they're often rather patient. Let me tell you about a young man, the son in a family I've known very well for many years. This guy is reasonably good in school. His grades are okay. He has many pals. At the outset, I would like to point out that when we speak about young people, in this case a teenager, we must be careful. This isn't a fully developed behaviour profile or character. Young people still have things to learn about life in general. All impressions are not definitive. So, what's the problem? This young man has his own ideas about what is true and false, and wild horses couldn't get him to change his mind. It may be something he heard from a friend, or something he saw on television, or something he picked up at school. When this knowledge or idea, irrespective of its source, has been established in his consciousness, it can't be dislodged. It makes no difference how often his parents point out the facts, or how tough they are when they present the evidence. His point of view is clear. It doesn't even matter if they point out the danger in this or that way of thinking. He persists in his belief. Think about it. You supply all the available facts, and the guy says that he understands. He agrees that it sounds logical. Other people could feasibly do it that way, with good results. But still, he's not prepared to change his point of view. Some people would call this pig-headedness. What's the reason for this? Excellent question. It may be a result of where he first got the information. If a friend says that you can earn just as much money collecting trash as a newly qualified doctor can earn, it doesn't really matter if it's true or not. If the same friend suggests you can't be arrested for drunk driving if you drive your car after drinking three beers, then this becomes the truth, even if we, with all the facts at our disposal, know that this is simply not the case. If this guy is told that he'll get a terrific job if he just works a little harder at mathematics, it becomes true. If he got this info from his best mate, it simply has to be true. If a green trusts a particular individual, that individual's word becomes law. This makes it easy to exploit greens, because they can be a little naive and gullible. And unfortunately, certain people take advantage of this fact. Sometimes this obstinacy becomes a strength, no doubt about that. But when those around them perceive it as pure pig-headedness, it can create problems. Why bother? Nothing is worth caring about. Since greens rarely make the first move, and almost always allow others to step up first, you can easily get the impression that a green is not especially interested or engaged. And often that's the case. He is more passive than he is active, and this has an impact on his behaviour. Not much is going on there. And what does it really matter? If you stay at home, nothing can really go wrong then, right? What Greens fail to see is that most other people want to do things. They assume that everyone thinks as they do and stays on the sofa. They're satisfied with doing nothing. Anything that upsets this standpoint becomes a threat. The result? Even more passivity. On one occasion, I heard a red-yellow boss describe his employees as uninspired and uninterested in their work. It tormented him, because no matter how hard he tried to entice and insist, they never left the starting block. He presented numerous ideas, some of which were very interesting, but nothing happened. It can be like that with Greens. They recognise a good idea as quickly as anyone else. But, for example, while their red colleagues sprint off with the baton, a Green just sits and waits. Often they're waiting for the right feeling to convince them of an idea's merit. And if that doesn't happen, well, they wouldn't do anything anyway, so they get what they want. Why not just wait and see if the urge to act goes away? This particular boss called in his employees and asked them how they viewed the business. He was worried about the evident lack of discernible commitment. A couple of the men, who were lower middle age, said straight out that they couldn't think of anything that was worth getting involved in. The boss became extremely frustrated. He tried everything, but got virtually no reaction. This can also happen in a marriage. There are stereotypes for everything, like that some woman might be drawn to the strong, silent type, for example. Nothing wrong with that. But after they're married, and she realised that this is all that he is, strong and silent, she may not be as happy. And when she makes plans and he says he doesn't care, she gets frustrated. And so she makes even bigger plans. And he clutches the armrests on his favourite recliner even harder. This is the paradox. The bigger the plans, the less likely it is that a Green will commit. All he wants is peace and quiet. Here's an example. I've been writing fiction for 20 years and really hope to become a published author one day. Everyone in the family knew this. Not that I made a huge deal out of it, but I didn't hide my ambitions either. One Green close to me understood how important it was for me to succeed. I've repeatedly spoken about my dream, explaining how it would make me feel if I succeeded as an author of fiction. Yet this Green never asked how my writing was going. Maybe a comment every 5 years that I shouldn't take things so seriously or I will only be disappointed. And when I said things like, "This year it will happen. Now is the time, damn it. I've got to work harder to succeed." The response was, "Wow, that's a lot of work." Lots of work is a Green's greatest enemy. Just because that's exactly what it is. Work. They live in a mindset that everything should be easy. This form of indifference and lack of commitment can kill the enthusiasm of even the most inspired person. I had to learn to rely on others to find the energy to struggle on with my writing. But a Green doesn't understand this. He doesn't want people to be too involved, because it's just bothersome. Instead, let's just sit here and do nothing. What's thought in secret is said in secret. Greens are reluctant to take a position on sensitive issues. They have just as many views and opinions as anyone else, but they don't like shouting them from the rooftops. The reason is simple. It can cause a fuss. The consequence of this tendency is a rather abstruse manner of expressing themselves. Instead of saying, "That's impossible," they may respond with something like, It appears that there are a few challenges in delivering that. Sure, both statements mean the same thing. We won't manage to do it in time. But by using a less direct means of expression, you take fewer risks. If you take a clear stance on something, then you have to stand up for it. For a Green, it's better to be safe than sorry. By expressing himself ambiguously, he avoids taking responsibility for the matter in question. He doesn't have to risk his good name if he's uncertain. If he hasn't taken a position in support of something, he also hasn't taken any position against something. You hear how illogical this sounds, right? But if you're Green, you know exactly what I mean. A woman I met once said that she believed what everyone else believed. But are Greens perceived as unclear just because they want to save a relationship? No, not at all. Greens just aren't as precise as the other colours. When a Red says that he absolutely hates listening to Eminem, a Green would say that he remembers better singers. When a Blue says that he's lost 5 pounds since last Tuesday morning at 10:03, a Green says that he's lost a few pounds lately. This is because Greens are not task-oriented, as Reds and Blues. Greens don't speak about facts in the same way. They would rather speak about relationships and feelings, which makes it more difficult to be precise. How do you measure a feeling? Saying, "I love you exactly 12% more than last month," is just not going to work. I know I should change this immediately, but I'll just think about it for a while. Here we have the most difficult stumbling block. If you want to make changes in a group consisting of many Greens, good luck. If it's a major change, you should consider whether it's really worth the effort. If it's urgent, you can forget the whole thing. This is what happens in the mind of a Green. I know what I have, but not what I'll get. It was better before. I've never done this before. The grass is not always greener on the other side. Sound familiar? Sure, not all changes are for the better, but let's be reasonable. I'm not saying that it's always wrong to express these sentiments, but when changes are really necessary, it can be very dangerous. A classic cliche, a little worn now, I know, is to consider how often you change where you sit at the breakfast table. I used to ask this question in the groups I met. Many smiled and said that they sat where they usually sit because it just happened. Sure, I do the same thing sometimes. But if someone were to point out that I was stuck in a rigid habit, or bad habit, I would do something about it. A Green, however, doesn't correct himself. When you look at a Green's reaction to the question, you'll understand that we're faced with a problem. I've seen adults become white in the face, wiping their foreheads at the mere thought of sitting on the other side of the table. I've even worked with a man, sooner, who had such a meticulous lunchtime routine that if he couldn't follow it precisely, the rest of the day was shrouded in sheer darkness. Sooner had a favourite lunch spot beneath a painting. He sat there every day at lunchtime, week in, week out, month out, and year in. Always the same chair. If he came into the dining room and saw that his spot was occupied, he would stop short. If he saw this quickly enough, he turned towards his backup location, not as good but still an acceptable spot, near a window. If he were forced to have his soup there, he would glare throughout the meal at whoever had nicked his spot. Of course, he never said anything. Instead, he just sulked the rest of the day. This is another thing Greens often do. Turn frustration inwards and feel awful so that everyone else notices it. If Sooner's backup spot was also occupied, he would just go back into the kitchen, the rest of his day ruined. Let me give you another example. My mother, departed but never forgotten, "We'll never stop loving you, our darling mother," who was nothing if not a Green, was always willing to help and took care of her grandchildren whenever needed, especially when they were little. I remember one time when my wife and I were invited to dinner on a Friday night. I had asked my mother to watch the kids weeks in advance because I knew that she needed time to mentally prepare herself for it. On the day the dinner was to take place, the hostess called. Her husband was sick and the whole thing was postponed. When I phoned my mum, I explained to her what had happened. We would be staying home that night. She went completely silent. I said that I still wanted her to come over because the children were excited to see their grandma. Mum was very hesitant. "What will happen now?" she asked. I said that it would be just like we'd planned originally. Because her bag was packed and the guest room was ready, it would be a perfect opportunity to spend a little time together. She hesitated. "It will be completely different now. You're at home." She was flustered by the change, and she needed time to think. She promised to phone back. What was really Mum's problem? Our change of plans necessitated no change for her at all. She was still going to stay overnight between Friday and Saturday. She could still see her grandchildren. She would, however, avoid having any responsibility for them. I tried to convince her that we could take care of her for once, instead of her taking care of us. This was a completely new situation for her. We were still there in the house, and that was the problem. My wife and I would be there. Maybe Mum had her heart set on watching a particular show on television. Maybe she'd thought about preparing a special meal for the children. Maybe. I don't know. She never said anything about it, so we can't know for sure. But the change was serious enough to warrant extra thinking time for her. She came in the end. A nice little side story, quite possibly related to her generation. I fetched her at 4:30. She asked why I came so late. I replied that I'd promised to be there at 5:00 and that I was actually 30 minutes early. Her response? She'd been ready since 4:00. I've never been so upset. But for God's sake, don't say anything to anyone. This is the second major dilemma with Green behaviour. They despise a squabble. This aversion to conflict also causes many other challenges, such as stubbornness, ambiguity, and resistance to change. Because Greens are pronounced relational people, nothing is more important to them than keeping a relationship together. The problem is that their method doesn't work. You can look at conflicts in two ways. The first way is called the harmony outlook, or striving for harmony. Everything depends on being on good terms with others. Reaching an agreement is an end in itself. This means that those who cause conflict are problematic troublemakers. Conflicts are indicative of poor leadership, poor communication, and discord. And so we smother conflict and pretend that it doesn't exist. Because who wants to be acquainted with a troublemaker? I once met a coach who used an interesting metaphor for this kind of behaviour. She said it was like sitting at the dinner table with a rotting pile of trash in the middle. You know, with mould and flies and everything. Everyone sees that the trash is there, but no one says anything. You brush away the flies and pass the food across the liquefying banana peels without thinking anything about it. Maybe by the end, someone wonders if there even really is a pile of trash on the table at all. Finally, one of the dinner table guests says, "We have to do something about this." That person becomes an agitator, because we now have to deal with this nasty mess of garbage. Couldn't she just have kept quiet? Nowadays, we know better. The aspiration of having everyone in agreement about everything all the time is an impossible utopia, not even worth trying to achieve. Someone will lift the lid off all that discord that was so effectively and hermetically sealed for such a long period of time. And what happens then? It stinks from a long way off. In the end, the harmony outlook inevitably leads to conflict. The second way, and the opposite of the first, is called the conflict outlook. It basically means that we accept that conflicts exist, that it's natural. No group exists where everyone is always in agreement about everything. The whole point of the conflict outlook is to deal with every little dissentient issue as soon as it shows its head. Reds, and also some yellows, do this naturally. When they see something that doesn't work, they say that it doesn't work. This means that problems can be resolved at an early stage. But you have to deal with the issue before it begins to stink. The conflict approach usually creates harmony. But a green will just turn a deaf ear. He'll do everything in his power to maintain that magical feeling that everyone is in agreement. It's nicer when everyone agrees, isn't it? Wouldn't the world be so much better if there were no conflicts? Consider a situation all of us have experienced at some point. We're in a meeting at work. There are maybe 10 people present in the room. Add or subtract from this so that you recognise the situation. Someone, the boss or anyone at all, has just completed his presentation and now asks what everyone is thinking. Full of expectation, he looks around, waiting for feedback. If there are any reds or yellows in the room, they will speak about their views on the proposal they've just seen. The reds will love it or loathe it. The yellows will speak about their own reflections on the proposal. One or two blues might have a few questions. What will the greens do? Absolutely nothing. They just lean back in their chairs and let themselves absorb the proposal. They say nothing at all unless asked a direct question. They look anxiously around, hoping that someone will say that this proposal is, in fact, an incomprehensible mess. The group is too large for them to trot out any dissenting opinions. To say something truly dramatic or negative would mean that everyone's eyes will be on you, and that's not going to happen. If they say what they're really thinking, a heated debate will erupt, and since a green doesn't want to take part in heated debates, he doesn't even want to be in the same room as one, he simply keeps silent. How will the speaker respond? He'll assume that everyone is in agreement. Right? What he doesn't know is that half the people in the room think it was the stupidest thing they've ever heard. When the truth creeps out, it has to sooner or later. Guess what happens then? Exactly. Conflict. You can be certain that while you are standing at the coffee machine and maybe even while visiting the restroom, the truth will come out. When greens need to relieve the pressure of not speaking out, they talk behind your back. In small groups of two or three people, they will gladly vent their displeasure. And they're good at it. As long as they think they can escape your gaze, they'll backbite you in ways you would never expect from a grin. How blue people are perceived. Even perfectionist blue individuals receive criticism. It can be about how they're perceived as evasive, defensive, perfectionist, reserved, fastidious, meticulous, hesitant, conservative, lacking independence, questioning, suspicious, tedious, aloof, and cold-hearted. Oof! The list of shortcomings found in these bastions of bureaucracy often tends to be quite long. But mainly, blues find it difficult to begin anything new because they want to prepare very thoroughly. Everything involves risks, and blues can be almost obsessed with details. Never place too many blues in the same group. They'll plan into the next century without ever putting a shovel to the ground. Furthermore, many blues are perceived as highly critical and almost suspicious. They miss nothing, and they have a tendency to deliver their observations in an insensitive fashion. They create quality work, but their hair-splitting critical approach to almost everything lowers the morale of those around them to dangerously low levels. These are people who consider themselves to be realists, when they, in everyone else's eyes, are in fact pessimists. 95% right is actually 100% wrong. Let's be honest from the start. All this keeping track of facts and focusing on details can go too far. There are limits to when it's reasonable to keep researching. Do you remember the CEO who wanted to buy leadership training? He never left the starting block. Blues want to have all the information on everything, and this can lead to problems with those around them. People who would be satisfied with good enough simply can't cope with hearing all those questions and all this relentless poking into details. A blue believes that good enough is never really good enough. I enjoy working around the house, changing the decor, hanging wallpaper every now and then. A few years ago, we remodeled our kitchen, and even though I got tremendous help from my family, I did quite a lot myself. I worked and toiled and was quite happy when it was finished. For a DIYer, I thought I managed it quite well. Hans, a good friend of mine, came by. We've known each other for many years, and he's very much on the ball. He knew that I'd worked very hard and that I felt quite pleased with myself. When he came into my kitchen, he looked around and said quietly, "New kitchen? Looks good. That cupboard door is crooked." Okay, so maybe it wasn't nice to hear that. But for Hans, it was the highest form of logic. He observed a mistake, and his sense of perfection meant that he couldn't ignore it. Besides, he's not a typical relational person, so he couldn't help saying things as they were. He wasn't directly criticizing me, only something I had done. Namely, not fitting the cupboard door straight. Fastidiousness can be expressed in various ways. It can be a person who can't cope with papers that aren't perfectly aligned on a desk, who rewrites an email about 15 times to get it truly perfect, or who works for hours on a simple Excel spreadsheet or PowerPoint presentation, just giving it the finishing touches. They never finish anything. There's always more to do. Once I was holding a communication training program for a group of people, all of whom were working in the same room. The group consisted of about 20 people. The first afternoon, I handed out the results of the behaviour analysis that each of them had taken earlier. Everyone read about themselves with increasing fascination, and most of them seemed very satisfied. Except for one lady. She was extremely upset by her analysis. It was, in fact, completely incorrect. After confirming with her that it was okay to discuss it in front of the whole group, I asked what it was she was displeased with. "There's so much that's incorrect," she told us. For example, the analysis revealed that she could be a perfectionist. She wasn't like that at all. I noticed the tiny smiles appearing on people's faces. Apparently, her colleagues knew something she didn't. I asked her why she thought that the analysis maintained she was a perfectionist. She had no idea. The whole thing was a complete mystery. It was a totally useless tool. Realising that the woman was a blue, I was careful not to argue too much. She wouldn't take me at my word. I was just some random consultant who'd been working with this tool for a measly 20 years. What did I know? Instead, I asked her to give an example showing that she was not a perfectionist. No problem, she had plenty. For example, she had 3 children, each of who had 3 best pals. When she came home in the evenings, there were so many shoes piled up inside the front door that she had to do the high jump to get in. She began by shaking the dirt off the doormat and putting the shoes in order. She confided in me that she used to put size 10 at the back, as those guys went home last, so it seemed most logical. She placed the smaller sizes closest to the door in neat rows. Then she went into the kitchen. What did she see there? Crumbs everywhere. All of these youngsters had been eating sandwiches, and the kitchen looked like a war zone. It took her 20 minutes to sanitize everything, put everything back in place, sweep, wipe the tables and worktops. Only then could she take off her coat and relax a little. Her colleagues were in stitches. The woman looked around, not understanding what the excitement was all about. That any of this could even be remotely obsessive was beyond her. Her house was so untidy. That was her point. The funny thing about this story is that a few years later I met the same woman, but in a totally different context. She gave me a big hug and said that the analysis of her behaviour was 100% correct. Stunned, I wondered how she arrived at that conclusion. It turned out that she'd kept the behaviour profile in her purse for a while. The analysis had a list of behaviours and qualities, and every time she found herself doing one, she ticked it off on the sheet. In the end, she ticked all of them off. She liked the profile. An amazing tool on the whole. I don't really know you, so keep your distance. You've done it, I've done it, we've all done it. Gone up to a person who seems to be a decent fellow and started talking about this and that, thinking you're going to have a nice chat. After a while, you realise that you're the one doing all the talking. If you have yellow traits in your behaviour, you may notice that there are strange pauses in the dialogue, if there really is a dialogue. You may notice that the other person fidgets a bit, signalling that he doesn't want to be part of this conversation. What's going on? We're just talking about the game yesterday, or about what the family did last summer, or where you intend to go on vacation. Do we have a problem or what? Yes. In fact, we do. Because this person doesn't willingly speak with strangers. Wait a minute, you may say. We've been working together for 3 months, and by now it should be perfectly okay to ask what his dog's name is. But this guy requires a lot of personal space, both physically and psychologically. He needs to know a person extremely well before opening up. Not like a red, who lets out with whatever he feels. Not like a yellow, who reveals his darkest secrets because he assumes that everyone is interested. Or like a green, who can be personal, but only in small groups and in a controlled environment. A blue doesn't need small talk. He can easily give the impression that he doesn't care about other people because he doesn't cultivate any relationships. Sure, he cares, but his needs are on a different level than everyone else's. He likes being in his own company and with immediate family. The consequence is clear for those around him. They find him cold-hearted and distant. That personal bubble is obvious, and it can be very chilly, particularly for yellows and greens. And so they call their blue friend a bore. Blues can often make us feel ill at ease. Why is he so cold and dismissive? Doesn't he care about me at all? Better safe than sorry. Think about it. Preferably three times. A good family friend couldn't leave her house without first checking to see if her keys were really in her handbag, even though placing them there was the last thing she'd done before going to the front door. Back in the 1980s, when I worked as a teller in the bank, I served people who had waited 30 minutes in line for just one single reason: to check that the balance printed on the ATM receipt really was correct. Much anticipation. The same computer, the same balance. But you never know. Best to check. And double check. If a triple check had been possible, they would have done it. Where does this need for control come from? Why can't blues trust what other people say, or just accept the information they hear? Answer? They can, of course. But if they also check themselves, then all the risks will be eliminated, right? But the fact remains that they don't trust others. Everything has to be confirmed and recorded and documented properly. Remember, we're talking here about behaviour as perceived by others. A blue checks everything one extra time because it's possible to check everything one extra time. When everything has been confirmed, then you just have to make a decision. I have a good friend who uses Excel diligently, but not like the rest of us. This guy has a special method. He writes a formula and inserts all the data. Before he sends any important files to his senior managers, he does a control check of everything using a calculator. Why does he do that? If you were to explain this to a red, he would declare that guy an absolute idiot. Explain it to a yellow, and he would laugh himself to death. Any blue will understand the whole thing immediately. There is a theoretical possibility that there could be errors in Excel. Even though he's typed the formula himself, something may still go wrong. Better to be on the safe side. How do others perceive this? Listen on. The only thing I can trust is myself and my own eyes. The guy who questions Excel has, of course, a problem explaining himself. Many people around him have their views about his method of always having to double-check and triple-check everything he does himself and everything everyone else does. They get furious when he, through his actions, clearly shows that he doesn't trust them. The other tiny little problem is that everything takes a terribly long time. This can be managed by working more hours. What's more problematic is the way relationships can suffer because of this habit. How demoralizing is it when you go up to someone and tell him about a possible breakthrough, and the first thing the person does is isolate all the different components and call into question every single point? Of course, if everyone looks long enough, they will find mistakes. Nor is it even sufficient to be right. You have to prove yourself to a blue. If he considers you an authority in a particular field, he'll be better at listening to you. The road, however, can be tricky. I've held many training courses and lectures on this subject, and if there are people who ask complicated questions, they're usually engineers, technical sales staff, or financial controllers. Maybe a handful of tax lawyers. Oftentimes, their colour is blue, and they're not impressed with me. Just because I've made my living doing this for 20 years doesn't mean I know what I'm talking about. Remember the woman who was accused of being a perfectionist? The only thing you can do is accept that among these people, the standard of proof will be much higher. Facts always remain, as we know. If I've prepared well enough, I can prove that what I'm saying is true. In time, they will trust me.